Yascha.
Avum. Bhakti. Devotional service. Bhagavati. To the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Parau. Lord Hari. Anishreyasa Ishvare. The controller of the supreme perfection of life, or supreme liberation. Vikridataha, swimming or playing. Amrita ambudau, in the ocean of nectar. Kim. What is the use? Shudrai, with small, akataka udakahai, ditches of water. Translation, a person fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, Hari, the Lord of the highest auspiciousness, swims in the ocean of nectar. For him, what is the use of the water in small ditches? So you can repeat. A person fixed in the devotional service of the Supreme Lord, Hari, the Lord of the highest auspiciousness, swims in the ocean of nectar. For him, what is the use of the water in small ditches? So purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. So, Vritrasura has formally prayed in the Bhagavatam 6th canto, 11th chapter, text 25. Nanaka prishtam nacha parameshjam sarvabhomam na rasadi patyam. I do not want the facilities for happiness on Brahmaloka, Swargaloka, or even Dhruvaloka, not to speak of this earth or the lower planets. I simply want to return home back to Godhead. This is the determination of a pure devotee. A pure devotee is never attracted to any exalted position within this material world. He simply wants to associate with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, like the inhabitants of Vrindavan, Srimati Radha Rani, the gopis, Krishna's father and mother, Nanda Maharaj and Yashoda, Krishna's friends and Krishna's servants. He wants to associate with Krishna's atmosphere of Vrindavana's beauty. These are the highest ambitions of a devotee of Krishna. Devotees of Lord Vishnu may aspire for a position. God bless you. Devotees of Lord Vishnu may aspire for a position in Vaikuntha Loka, but a devotee of Krishna never aspires even for the facilities of Vaikuntha Loka. He wants to return to Goloka Vrindavan and associate with Lord Krishna in his eternal pastimes. Any material happiness is like water in a ditch, whereas the spiritual happiness eternally enjoyed in the spiritual world is like an ocean of nectar in which the devotee wants to swim. Very nice. So, yasya bhaktir bhagavati arona shreya sheshvare avrakirato mritambo dao kim shudrai katakurikahai. So, omaganati mirandasha gnanjana shilakaya Chakshurun Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this verse very nicely describes a devotee's renunciation or detachment. Many times we hear about this principle of Vairagya. In fact, in the prayers to Lord Chaitanya made by Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, we find Vairagya Vidya Nijabhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana, Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dari, Kitambu Hir Yastam, hum prapadye. You all know that prayer? Does anyone know that prayer? No. Too bad. I won't tell you the translation. Anyway, so the translation is, it's actually a very important prayer that devotees, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita says the devotees take this prayer to heart. Vairagya Vidya. Lord Chaitanya, you come to teach Vairagya. The word Vairagya is very interesting. It means without passion. Like Rajagun. You've heard of Rajagun before? Anyone's heard of Rajagun? It means passion. You want more and more and more. You want to migrate to New Zealand, to Australia. Like we were talking about doctors, was it? Talking to doctors the other day, that the doctors, they think, well, here in Fiji, you know, I'll make a little bit of money, but if I migrate to New Zealand, I'll make more, and if I migrate to Australia, $400,000 a year. Wow! It's like, let me just get this thing working again. It's like the carrot in front of the donkey. And who's the donkey? Anyway, so, you know that statement? You know that thing, the carrot in front of the donkey? So the problem with the carrot being in front of the donkey is the carrot moves. I'm trying to get this thing working again so I can broadcast class. It went off for some reason. Anyway, the point is the carrot moves as fast as the donkey moves. That's really funny. So, the donkey, anyway, somehow or this is not cooperating with me. Just give me a second. Sometimes my technology doesn't cooperate and there's people waiting to watch. So, the donkey is attached to the carrot, in fact. You know that? You've seen that before? And with every step the donkey makes, the carrot goes forward a step too. So it's like that. So we have this. This is actually the problem with the mode of passion, that every step you make for material things, then the happiness seems to recede in the distance at the same rate. It's something like we were talking about yesterday. We were talking about eating sugar. That you take some and it gives you a little bit of happiness, then you need more and more and more. It's like a drug. So it's like that. Anyway, so the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires. One is always thinking, I have this much, I want more. He is my enemy, I have conquered him. Like this, this is the description. Of course, we did talk yesterday how the mode of passion leads one to demoniac activities. Remember we giving the class yesterday? I said the kshatriya is in the mode of passion, and oftentimes because they're in the mode of passion, they lose their sense of balance or their equanimity, and they succumb to demoniac activities because of wanting more and more and more. Like Ravana. I mean, he wanted one wife after another. He was traveling with his Pushpaka Vimana, and he would see these girls and be kidnapping them one after the other. You know, you'd think he'd be satisfied with one wife, two wives, three wives. You know, that's probably enough. And so, and then finally, he tried to kidnap this Vedavati, and she immolated herself. And then later on with Sita Devi. So in any case, the mode of passion is born of unlimited desires. It never ends. So forget about migration. I talk a lot about that. Anyway, I'll leave that alone. Let's say you're a member of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, and you're a new bhakta, or bhakti, and you're thinking, if I perform my devotional service nicely, then I can one day become a pujari. And if I perform it even nicer, then one day I become temple commander or something like that. And I perform it even nicer, then one day I'll become temple president. And if I serve Krishna even nicer, this is a mode of passion in devotional service. And I serve Krishna even nicer, then one day I'll become GBC. And if I serve Krishna nicer, then one day I'll become guru. And if I serve Krishna nicely, then one day I'll become God. Of course, it can't be from God. Because, in other words, there's a limit to what you can become. There's what do they say, glass ceiling. That position is, God's position is already taken. No, but actually, it's a fact. Actually, instead of becoming God, you can become a demigod and enjoy life in the heavenly planets. And then when your good karma runs out, shene punye marcha lokam vishanti. So, anyway, that's the mode of passion. So, getting back to the prayer of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. Vairagya Vidya. Lord Chaitanya has come to teach Vairagya. That means detachment from all passionate activities in this world. And then Vidya. Vidya means transcendental knowledge. By the process, Nija Bhakti Yoga. By the process of Bhakti Yoga. Not by the Mayavadi impersonal process. The Mayavadi process involves what's called neti neti. You try to become detached from things without having a higher taste. That's something like Buddhism, for example. They have the Four Noble Truths. What are the Four Noble Truths? Material existence is suffering. We believe in that. Second Noble Truth is that if you get rid of the suffering... First of all, the suffering is caused by lust, by desire. Third one is you get rid of the desire, you get rid of the suffering. True. And fourth one is that by following the Eightfold Path the Buddhas teach, you'll be able to get rid of your desires, hence getting rid of the suffering. But that doesn't work. The fourth one we don't actually believe in. Because their Eightfold Path is like right living, right thinking, right eating, etc., like that. But only by devotional service can you actually become detached from this world. And that the word technically is nirapeksha. Nirapeksha basically means disinterested. That's a devotee's detachment. It's not negative or positive. Negative and positive, that means attraction and repulsion, they're all, it's all the same coin, they're opposite sides of the same coin. Whereas the devotee, he's just disinterested. He's aloof, that's another word. He's aloof from the material world. It's not something that's repulsive to him, or it's not something that's attractive, it's just, it's not interesting. Not interesting at all. Just like sometimes I read in this National Geographic magazine about different places. National Geographic magazine sometimes talks about different places in the world you can go to see wonderful things. Like there was once an article about the icebergs in Alaska. You know what an iceberg is? Iceberg is a big ice cube like you put in your soda. It's just... Sometimes they're as big as a country. There's some as big as Fiji, basically. Did you know that? There's some ice cubes as big as Fiji. But nobody lives on them except for the bears. So you read about that, you go and you think, oh, maybe I should go see that. I even have disciples who have gone to see it. It's true. Actually, it's not here, not disciples in Fiji. So they've actually spent like thousands of dollars. I have other disciples who've gone to the African jungle to see the lions and tigers. Isn't it? And so when sometimes even disciples offer me the opportunity to go. They say, Gurudev, you can go. Of course, I mentioned the other day, one time a disciple recently gave me the opportunity to go skydiving. Would you like to go skydiving? Would you like to go see the ice cubes? Because when they say, would you like to see the icebergs, which are actually ice cubes, I said, no, I can just get a glass and look at the ice in that way. It's the same thing. So in other words, I'm disinterested. It's not really something that's attractive or repulsive. I mean, what am I going to do with it? Because we're serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that disinterestedness, Vairagya Vidya, Nija Bhakti Yoga, Shikshartha Eka, that is the one teaching, important teaching of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. You know, Bhakti Yoga, so you become disinterested and have knowledge, Vasudeve Bhagavati, Bhakti Yoga Prayojita Janayati Asu Vairagyam Jnanam Cha Yod Ahaitukam. So that's another verse from the Bhagavatam. It says, by performing devotional service, Vasudeva Bhagavati, Bhagavati means unto Bhagavan. Bhakti Yoga Prayojita, same thing as Lord Chaitanya's verse we just recited. Janayati Asu Vairagyam. Vairagya occurs naturally, and also one gets jnana. So this is actually a parallel verse to Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's verse. You understand? The parallel verse in the Bhagavatam. So, the Bhakti Yoga Prayojita. So Vairagya Vidya Nija Bhakti Yoga Shiksharta Eka Purusha Purana. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Sharira Dhari. Lord Chaitanya, you've appeared in the form of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Kripam Budhir Yastva Maham Prapajay, that you are an ocean of mercy, and basically, I surrender to you. So, anyway, this is a very important verse. So the point is, the higher taste. That's really what we're talking about. The higher taste, how to get the higher taste, and why we don't have the higher taste. We've talked about that in previous classes. We don't have the higher taste because we're offending Vaishnavas. And if we want the higher taste, then we have to serve the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. What that means is serving the mission in a humble way. We've talked about that previously in class, that coming to Krishna's temple different sanghas that we have, and doing some humble service. Unfortunately, as we so-called advance in devotional service, our humility decreases, unfortunately. I'm not saying that it's a sign of actual advancement. It's a sign of so-called advancement. We think we become so advanced that we can no longer cook for Krishna, that we can no longer clean the pots for Krishna, that we can no longer scrub the floor for Krishna. I remember when I first joined the movement, the first thing the temple president said, this is 1971, he said, there's Krishna's pots. And I was born in a very wealthy family. I'd never cleaned a pot in my life. I didn't even know how to clean a pot, because I thought that's what mothers were for. And so many things. I mean, I actually didn't know how to clean my clothes, didn't know how to clean, because I thought clothes got automatically cleaned when you threw them on the floor and they appeared the next day on hangers. That was my mentality. Somehow there was a clothes fairy who picked up the clothes. No, I knew it was my mother. So then I joined the movement. The first thing they said is, you got to do something you've never done in your whole life before. You know, clean pots. And not only do you have to clean pots, but they would tell me that Prabhupada said that even if the pot has some black mark on the bottom, it's not clean. You know, that much, the pot should shine. So I gritted my teeth, bit my lip, bit the bullet, you know, there's all these statements like that. And I went into Krishna's kitchen and I started cleaning pots and I felt happy. It was really nice. I was happy with scrubbing and I just looking at the pots and taking off each little spot on the pots and feeling just so happy, happier than I felt my whole life. And then, mopping the floor and sweeping the floor. It was just so much happiness. We forget this simple happiness that one gets from serving Krishna in a humble way, isn't it? We forget it. And, you know, we think that we're going to be happy sitting on a big seat, having people worshiping you or something like that. That actually gets boring after a while. You understand? It gets boring, like people offering the puja to you, you know. Let me bathe your feet. Oh, my God, another time. Jaldi, jaldi, do it quickly, get it over with so we can actually eat prasadam. So, isn't it? I mean, people think it's, you know, ecstasy like that, and just thinking, oh my God, another one, another arti, So, yes, that's what's going through my mind. So, but the real happiness is just serving the Vaishnava. I mean, I just sometimes, when I'm here on a regular Sunday feast, I serve the guest prasadam. And I feel so much happiness from doing that. And they're feeling happiness because I'm feeling happy. You know, if devotees feel happiness doing that, that happiness is infectious. Infectious means other people catch it like a disease. And they become happy. Because basically everyone wants to be happy. So that's the method of having a higher taste. Not like Prabhupada said, going to Radhakund and sitting down and making believe that you're experiencing a higher taste and you're understanding Krishna and the gopis, but actually serving this mission in a very humble way. And then when you get that, I remember that the most ecstatic times I had was when I was distributing Srila Prabhupada's books for 12 hours a day. You know, come back after a whole day of preaching and eating very little, and it was just like, it was practically the devotees would, in the Sankirtan vehicle, even on top of the Sankirtan, would be rolling on the ground in ecstasy. We couldn't even go to sleep. We're just so happy just by doing this simple, humble service. So that's the that's really the higher taste. It's an internal thing that occurs. It's not an external interaction of the senses with their sense objects. And the happiness goes to such an extent that even we have descriptions in the Vedic literatures, particularly Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu and other literatures of the Goswamis and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, about the different varieties of happiness. These are called bhavas. Bhava means emotion. So the emotions of a devotee become so intense and so blissful that the devotee can't even maintain his consciousness sometimes. For example, Shukadeva Goswami, who spoke the Srimad Bhagavatam, he never mentioned Srimati Radharani's name in the whole Srimad Bhagavatam. There's a reason for that. I mean, sometimes you find these people criticized. There was one sadhu from South India who was criticizing the Hare Krishna movie. He said, "Oh, you worship Radharani." I mean, really, it was obnoxious criticism. "You worship Radharani, but her name is not mentioned in the Bhagavatam." Actually, she is mentioned indirectly. Radhika, she who worships. Because the word Radha means to worship. Like that. So, Shukadeva Goswami did not cite the name of Srimati Radharani in the Bhagavatam, because he would have been in so much ecstasy he wouldn't have been able to continue and finish the Bhagavatam, and poor Maharaj Pariksha would have been left there with his guru rolling on the ground. He said, "Gurudev, I'm getting ready to leave my body," and the guru would have been unconscious. Can you imagine that? "Gurudev, speak to me, Krishna Katha." "Hey, Govinda." Like that. I mean, that's how much ecstasy a devotee experiences. And what to speak? Of course, Lord Chaitanya showed that to us in his pastimes, where Lord Chaitanya was experiencing so much ecstasy that sometimes he would even hit his head on the floor in the Gambira where he was staying at night. And the devotees were so much worried about him hurting himself that they assigned a devotee just to sit there with Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all night and act as Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pillow. And so Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was too embarrassed to exhibit ecstasy then. Or Lord Chaitanya would run out when he saw a sand dune. He would think, that was in Jagannath Puri, of course, he would think it was Govardhan, and he would run towards it. Or he'd run into the ocean. And the devotees would have to find him after a fisherman dragged them in his net. I mean, this is so much ecstasy, the pure devotees. And of course, Lord Chaitanya is not just a pure devotee. He's Krishna in the mood of Radharani. In fact, that is one of the main reasons that Krishna appeared as Lord Chaitanya, so that he could serve Krishna. That's interesting. Krishna was thinking that my devotees are my humble devotees are experiencing so much happiness, and he's God, that why shouldn't I get some of that happiness? Why are they keeping it from me? I want to be a devotee too. Can you imagine that? You're thinking you want to be the controller. You want to be the boss. You want to be the GVC, you know, like me. So, you want to be the guru. You're thinking like that. And Krishna is thinking, I want to be a humble devotee. So who is right? You or Krishna? Krishna's right. And then Krishna enjoys so much. That's one of the primary esoteric reasons that Krishna appears as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because he understands Radharani is enjoying more than him. But the enjoyment can't be understood from the material perspective. Because from the material perspective, the enjoyment of the residents of Braj sometimes appears to be suffering. Just like when Krishna left Braj, he was 16 years old, and Srimati Radharani was a little younger, and he never came back. It appears like suffering. You become Krishna's devotee, and guess what happens? For the rest of your life, you're suffering. So you look at it from a material perspective, and you think, I don't want to be a devotee. Look what happened to Srimati Radharani. Look what happened to the Pandavas. I don't want to be a devotee like that. I want to be a devotee of the demigods. Let me worship Lord Shiva. He's Ashutosh. He's easily pleased. Lord Shiva's devotees become rich. Krishna's devotees, look at, they have to suffer so many ways. So from a material perspective, it doesn't appear very attractive. However, these devotees, like Vipralamba Seva, the gopis in Vrindavan, experiencing the mood of separation is the highest ecstasy. In fact, in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it said that the devotees are experiencing so much pain, they can't distinguish between pain and ecstasy. Because the pain is ecstatic and the ecstasy is ecstatic. I mean, everything's ecstatic there. Because it's all connection with Krishna, even when people are crying. Yugayitam nimishena chakshusha pravashayitam shunyayitam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Feeling your separation, I'm considering a moment like, of course, probably translates as 12 years or more, but it's actually a yuga cycle. And the whole world is vacant or void in your absence, Krishna. So this is the highest ecstasy. And the ecstasies are described in elaborate detail by the acharyas. Like you have the vibhavas, that means what stimulates an ecstasy. Then you have an anubhava, the ecstasies that follow once you're stimulated, like foaming at the mouth. I remember we had one devotee, his name was Anubhavananda. And he sometimes would foam at the mouth. Because he was a little immature, and we thought, oh, he's experiencing ecstasy. So anyway, so there's anubhava, the ecstasies that follow, sattvika bhava, the constitutional ecstasies, there are 8 of those, or vyabhachari bhava, the 33 ecstatic, uncontrollable, intermittent ecstasies, like like death is one of them. Not the one actually dies, but it's just like you see, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu saw Lord Jagannath, everyone thought practically he was dead. And Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya had to hold the cotton swab in front of his nostril. And he saw there was a little bit of breath coming. So there's so much ecstasy in Krishna consciousness. And then you have your internal life as you progress further in Krishna consciousness to the platform of Raganuga Bhakti, then you have your internal life whereby you're interacting with Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan internally while you're doing your external activities. It's amazing. And then you go to Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. So anyway, there's so much happiness there, but what's required is humility. Trinadapi sunichena torati shishna manina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. And what does it mean, humility? Not only serving in a very humble way, But manina, manadena, to offer respects to all other living entities. In other words, not to think that you're better than anyone else, but to actually serve others. Like if someone comes to the temple, we should think that I'm meant to serve that person. No, we shouldn't think, oh, why did they come just when I was getting ready to eat? Like that story of Ranti Dev. Everybody knows that story? How many days was he fasting for? Do you remember? 41, I think. He was fasting for 41 days, and it came time for him to eat. And you would think, you know, 41 days, you know, I really want to eat. So anyway, what happened is, basically, different living entities. A Brahmin came, Shudra came, a man with his dog came, and basically he gave away everything, even the water that he could have drunk. That's amazing, isn't it? After 41 days. He gave it all away. Because he understood the principle of yastu sarvani bhutani admane vanupashati, seeing Krishna in everyone's heart. See, when someone comes to the temple, Krishna is coming with them. When a living entity comes, whether they're Indian or Fijian or Chinese or Japanese or Taiwanese or Malaysian, did I leave any out? Or African, Krishna's there. And so you're receiving Krishna in their hearts. That's another point if we want to preach, to treat everybody like a temple of God. And if we do that, we will be successful in our preaching mission, and we'll be experience great ecstasy and happiness. So these are all secrets. And then when you experience this happiness, all this material stuff appears, like described in the verse, like a ditch. You know, there's this description in today's verse. What is the use of water in small ditches? So that's the secret. You want to become detached? Become ecstatic. You want to become ecstatic? Serve in a humble way. Offer respects to all living entities. Serve Prabhupada's mission. Come to the temple. Come to the preaching center. Serve Prabhupada's mission. Serve Prabhupada's movement. Then there'll be no question of being attached to, and don't commit offenses. So, who's that? What? He also has Krishna in his heart. So anybody have any questions or comments about it? Yes. Sachi Mata.
If by nature we are to be happy,
yeah.
Why do we feel sad?
Because we're puffing ourselves up like that proverbial frog that Prabhupada talked about. The frog in the well thing, we think we're more than we are. We're self-centered. I mean, actually, even depression to a certain extent can be understood as me-centered. You know, I'm so sad. Whatever. You know, so we should be thinking of Krishna's happiness. We should be thinking of other living entities' happiness. I mean, there's so much service to be done. The reason we have this temple here is to give devotees the opportunity to serve. Krishna doesn't have to come here to be worshipped by us. He's happy enough in Goloka Vrindavan. He gets enough to eat there. There he doesn't get too much salt in his food. I mean, Krishna is so kind, even if you put too much salt here, he somehow or other accepts it. It's like the devotee was offering banana peels to the Lord. So anyway, apart from that humorous statement, Krishna is here to give us an opportunity. This is an opportunity. We're giving you opportunities to serve. Krishna doesn't need your service. So basically, we're unhappy because we're self-centered. As soon as we try to become Krishna-centered, then happiness comes. Other-centered. Other-centered. Even in the material world, that principle applies. I mean, for example, there's this famous charitable person, Mother Teresa, you may have heard of. You heard of Mother Teresa? She was serving the poor in Calcutta, the poor and sick in Calcutta. And she was very happy. And now I'm not saying that we should engage in mundane charity. That's not my point. She also tried to convert devotees into Christians, but that's another point. But she was very happy because that's the mode of goodness, the material mode of goodness. What to speak of spiritual happiness? So in other words, by serving others, even materially one becomes happy. What to speak of spiritually, then you become unlimitedly happy. Kevalananda Kanda. That's the principle. But the mode of passion is like happiness in the beginning, and what is it like at the end? Does anyone know the Bhagavad Gita? Happiness in the mode of passion is like blank in the beginning, and what is it like at the end? Bhagavad Gita scholars here? It's like nectar in the beginning, and the end is like poison. Right? Isn't that what the Bhagavad Gita says? Read Bhagavad Gita. Devotees have to study these books more. That's Bhagavad Gita. That's the primary book. So, in other words, it becomes like poison. And happiness in the mode of ignorance is just, there's no happiness. It's just basically ignorance from beginning to end. And happiness in the mode of goodness is like poison in the beginning, Bhagavad Gita says, and then it becomes like nectar. In other words, you force yourself to do something that's good for you, but you don't want to do it in the beginning. But then after you do it, you feel happiness. Like if I say, serve the Sunday feast. And someone says, oh no, what if there's not anything left over for me? What if someone eats all the pakoras? Or the jalebis? How can I serve when my stomach is talking right now? Yeah, I'm hungry. My mouth is salivating. I will be miserable. So you force yourself. That's called intelligence. And you start to serve, and then you feel happy. And you don't notice that you're hungry. And then later on, when you actually sit down and eat prasadam, it tastes better. Because in the mode of passion, trying to enjoy, you're going to eat too fast to enjoy the prasadam anyway. Because you're going to be thinking, maybe there won't be enough, and you'll just keep pouring it into your mouth. That's a starvation complex. So the point is, yes, you just use your intelligence, start serving, and then you experience happiness. Happiness in the mode of goodness according to Krishna in the Gita. So that's the point. If you serve in a humble way, then you'll be happy. That's the remedy for depression. The remedy for depression is you pick up a broom and start sweeping the temple floor. Or you go to another devotee and say, not just the guru, you go to another devotee and say, how can I serve you? I mean, just like last night, we visited some devotees that had some illnesses. And this is one of the things we do. We visit devotees in the hospital and they have some illnesses. Actually, I spend quite a bit of time visiting devotees who are sick. And that's unfortunate. I don't want devotees to be sick. But anyway, what happens is you feel such great happiness, or helping devotees leave their bodies. Like I gave that example a few times, how I've helped devotees leave their bodies. I mean, I haven't helped them in a bad way leave their bodies. I've said, you know, euthanasia. No. Mercy killing. But you know, I've helped devotees remember Krishna at the time, and it's very ecstatic, a humble service. And then another thing is when I do it, the other devotees start to copy, which is a good idea. As I gave that example, we had one devotee who was leaving her body, and I was going there every day, reading to her, and even bringing my deities, Govardhan, to see her, and she was very happy like that. And then when the other devotees saw that, they started coming, and they started performing menial service with her, you know, because they were ladies. I couldn't do the menial service. So, and then everybody became happy. Just by serving a Vaishnava. You know, someone, the Vaishnava's in the hospital, we should immediately rush there. And just, you know, what do you need? Can I bring you prasadam? Not that a Vaishnava should have to eat hospital food. That's enough to kill you. Right? Hospital food? Particularly here, isn't it? You know, what is that called when you die in the hospital due to something they give you? There's a technical name for it. What? No, there's a name for, like, a hospital, you get a disease in the hospital and you die because of the treatment, not because of the disease you had originally. What? Huh? Nosocomia? Yeah, so. I mean, so devotees should be rushing. Well, there's so many opportunities to serve other devotees. So many opportunities we're given here. And if you do that, you'd be so happy. But you're thinking, I want to be the one who serves. You know. Or you're using some excuses, you know, that, well, the temple, they didn't treat me well. Someone yelled at me when I went to the temple the other day. So what? That's a test. You know, your mother yells at you too. Do you give her up? How many times did your mother yell at you? I can't even count the times my mother yelled at me. How many times my mother spanked me? Does that mean I reject her? So the temple, you know, the devotees are like that. So if a devotee yells at you, first of all, if a devotee yells at you, what does that mean? That they're in pain. It doesn't mean anything else. And of course, because they can't yell at you because they don't know you, you're a spirit soul. How can someone even yell at you because you're the spirit soul in the body? They don't even know you. They don't even see you. That's what I think. When someone criticizes me, I think they don't even see me. I'm the soul in the body. All they're seeing is this gross matter. So when someone yells at me, someone gets angry with me, or someone criticizes me, I feel sorry for them. Because they're the ones who are suffering, not me. I don't have to take their suffering on myself. And that makes me want to serve them more and pray for them more when I do that. So don't think you should yell at me so I pray for you more. Don't take that out of context. You know, Maharaj said, if someone yells at him, he'll pray for them more. Okay. That doesn't work like that. So that's how we should feel. Just serving amanina manadena. If you want to always be attached to chanting, then you have to be ready to offer all respects to others. All others. Krishna's in their heart. So that's the secret of having a higher taste. You know, people ask me, you know, how can you be renounced in your eating? It's not hard because, you know, I just like serving Krishna. And I like serving Krishna's devotees. That's how. Very easy. Not a problem. As far as serving the tongue, you know, who cares? You've eaten so many things over the last, for me, 64 years. And what has been the result? What's the result of all the pakoras I ate before? What do I have for? What do I have to show for it? Right? Nothing. I mean, prasadam, yes, devotional service. But, you know, but we have to think of pleasing Krishna and Krishna's representatives. And that's bhakti. When you think of bhakti of love, then you can do things that ordinarily you wouldn't want to do. Like, a mother loves the child. So she can change the diapers on the child. Without love, how can you do that? If you ask me to do that, I will run away. If some mother comes to me with her little baby and says, Maharaj, can you change his diapers? I'll say, you know, I want to be humble, but not that humble. You know, I'm preaching about it in class, but not, you know, that's my limit. Yeah, I mean, don't test me, please. So, but the mother does it gladly. She sees even the stool like sandalwood pulp. That's what the Bhagavatam says. Because when there's love, then it's not a, then it's easy to do. Controlling the senses is easy. Serving the mission, doing austerities is easy, right? But there has to be love. And we get that love by serving Krishna's devotees. Not just the guru. That's impersonalism if we just serve the guru. We serve each other. When we see each other, we should think, here's an opportunity for me to serve you. Yeah, Charlie, you mean? Well, so Sangha of devotees. But the temple is, especially the temples and the preaching centers established in ISKCON, are actually parts of Srila Prabhupada's body. I mean, there's nothing special about them. That we should understand. No, we should serve devotees in their homes too. I'm not saying you only serve a devotee in the temple and when they go home you just don't pay attention to them. But the point is that this is Prabhupada's institution. This is a manifestation of Prabhupada's kripa, these temples. The temples and preaching centers. Preaching centers, sanghas, bhakti vritcha programs, they're all part of the greater ISKCON. So, no, Prabhupada. It's a manifestation of Prabhupada. I mean, these are Prabhupada's deities. Prabhupada, I mean, who are we to install deities? I mean, Prabhupada, by the mercy of Prabhupada, Radhagopal Bihari, Gaudiya, Sitaram, Lakshman, and Hanuman are here. So we should, you know, these are the outposts. These are the temples. Prabhupada said the temples of Vaikuntha. So we should pay special attention to these temples. Mandira Marjanado, it says the spiritual master cleanses the temple along with his disciples. So this is very important. Very important. I mean, in fact, Prabhupada really didn't want devotees to have so much deities in their own homes. Prabhupada, you know, I go to people's homes and, you know, and anyway, devotees shouldn't get so much into their own personal deity worship. I know they have, may have little deities like that. But Prabhupada wanted people to concentrate on the temple deities. Yeah. Then you help. Yeah, but you have to be part of the solution. You're either part of the solution or part of the problem. You choose. If we see some problem, volunteer. You know, let me help. If there's not enough prasadam being distributed or cooked, then you cook. I mean, it's also to think, what do they say? There's some people who, trying to remember that exact saying, who see something happen, there's some people who wonder what happened, and there's some people who make things happen. So we should be the people who make things happen. I mean, yes, I mean, in any situation there's some sort of fault or some sort of problem, so let's try to correct it. And every one of us can correct it. We see some problem in the temple, you know, let's, anything. Let's say we see the temple needs paint, then maybe we should go around and collect money so that we can paint the temple. Right? Of course, you coordinate all that with the management. Or, there's so many things we can, or if we see some problem with devotee relationships, then you may organize a seminar so devotees can learn how to relate better with each other. I think we should always be thinking of helping to solve the problem. We can't, if we just sit back and say, you know, this has been happening for so many years, but what have we done to try to correct the problem? But we may not be able to correct the problem, but we should try our best to correct it. Yeah.
Every day see something new. You see the baby.
Yeah. Yeah, oh yeah, the deity, I mean the deity, Krishna looks, yeah, ever fresh, Navayovanam cha. I mean, and Krishna's smiling, hopefully he's smiling. I've been in some temples where Krishna actually looked like Lord Nrsingadev. Why didn't Krishna look like Lord Nrsingadev? And it was very frightening. Ugra Nrsinga, where the deities were. But the deities are being worshipped nicely here. Anyway, there's so much service. We're giving opportunity for service here. And if there's some deficit, some problem, help correct it. That's all I'm saying. Okay, I think we have to end because the deities are getting upset with us. So all glory to Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai, Gaura Premananda, Hari Hari Bo.